You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Let's talk about Reproductive Biology Associates, or RBA, in the state of Georgia, out of Atlanta. In a data breach notification issued by both RBA and its affiliate, My Egg Bank, RBA states that they first learned that they were hit by a ransomware attack on April 16th of this year when, and I quote, a file server containing embryology data was encrypted and therefore inaccessible. However, they believe the attackers first gained access to the systems on the 7th of April and a server containing health information on the 10th. Reproductive Biology Associates investigation has determined that the data stolen during the ransomware attack contained approximately the following information on 38,000 patients: full name, address, social security number, lab results, and information relating to the handling of human tissue. You can figure out what they're doing, but they're doing embryology, which means embryos. So that obviously is a huge, huge thing. If you have anything to do with Reproductive Biology Associates, or RBA, in Atlanta, Georgia, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about Wolf Eye Clinic, because roughly 500,000 current and former patients of Wolf Eye Clinic locations around the state of Iowa may have had their personal information stolen in a February 8th ransomware attack, according to the company, this past Tuesday, about a week ago or so. That's all I know at this moment. Obviously, that's a huge problem. So if you have anything to do with Wolf Eye Clinic, heads up. Moving on, let's talk about Los Angeles-based DreamHost. This is a web hosting company because a huge database belonging to one of the world's largest web hosts, DreamHost, was leaking names, usernames, and email addresses of its customers. The data wrapped up in this database contained 815 million records, also included administrator and user information for DreamPress, which is DreamHost's widely used service for WordPress websites. The data appeared to date back at least 3 years to 2018, though it's unclear how long the database was openly accessible. So if you or your business uses DreamHost to host your website, definitely go check in. And moving on, I want to give you guys an update on the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department. If you recall, they got hit and basically ransomed, and the ransomware attackers stole very sensitive information, including on informants. Now we have an update. The leak from the Metro Police Department totals 250 gigabytes. It's been uploaded progressively by the ransomware group Babak to their dark website. And then this is where another website, Distributed Denial of Secrets, comes in, because they are retrieving that data as it becomes available and basically getting it out to researchers who have requested access to these data sets. And I quote Distributed Denial of Secrets: "In addition to the limited distribution portion of this data set, we are assembling torrents for some of the email inboxes that we converted from .pst to .eml. The first public torrent includes 74,874 emails from the inbox of the lead civilian analyst for the department's intelligence branch, a torrent of the 17,690 emails from the director of human resources is available upon request." Meaning, they are basically fracturing this out, and the data from the Washington, D.C. Metro Police is coming out. This is obviously a huge, huge problem. And if their informant lists get out or to the general public, we may actually see some people being executed as a result of them helping the police against the criminals. Huge problem. I'll keep you updated. Moving on to a data breach that... Well, they're going to make Audi and Volkswagen smile, because we're talking about Mercedes-Benz. And if you recall, a couple of weeks ago on my last show, I talked about Volkswagen getting hit, which ended up affecting something like 3 million Audi customers. This week, Mercedes-Benz is on the chopping block, because on June 11th, Mercedes-Benz had a vendor that informed them that the personal information of select customers was exposed due to an insufficiently secured cloud storage instance. According to Mercedes, the breach affects some customers and potential vehicle buyers who had entered sensitive information on the Mercedes-Benz company and dealer websites between 2014 and 2017. And I quote, No Mercedes-Benz system was compromised as a result of this incident, and at this time, we have no evidence that any Mercedes-Benz files were maliciously misused. The vendor who notified Mercedes-Benz of the data breach states that the exposed information included self-reported customer credit scores, driver's license numbers, social security numbers, credit card numbers, and dates of birth. However, the company has stated that this information would not have been searchable or indexed by a typical search engine. After the company released this data breach statement after reviewing almost 1.6 million unique customer records, which included name, address, email, phone numbers, and some purchased vehicle information, and here we are. Upon completion of this investigation, they determined that under 1,000 customers might have had additional personal information exposed via publicly accessible cloud storage solution, which is the one in question here. So if you have purchased a Mercedes or were interested to the point where you signed up on a dealer website or on Mercedes itself, their website between 2014 and 2017, it looks like Mercedes-Benz's vendor got you hit. And like I said, I'm sure Audi's secretly smiling at that one. Moving on, let's talk about Maximus Corp. They are a global provider of government health data services, and they just had a data breach that exposed the personal information of 334,690 Medicaid healthcare providers nationwide. The company said in a statement provided to basically publications that on May 19th, it discovered an unauthorized party had accessed one of its applications related to Medicaid provider credentialing and licensing within the Ohio Department of Medicaid between May 17th and May 19th. Maximus did not supply a complete list of states that were informed of this breach, nor did the company offer details on the type of attack. The company says it began informing individuals affected on June 18th, along with filing formal data breach notifications with state officials where victims are located. So if you're on Medicaid, heads up to you, you might be involved in this, and so hopefully you're not. Moving on, let's talk about Workforce West Virginia. This is West Virginia's unemployment system. They took their computers offline after learning of a potential security incident with the Mid-Atlantic Career Consortium Employment Services database on April 13th, according to Workforce West Virginia. The agency did not say how many individuals' personal information was possibly accessed. It said those that may have had their information exposed were notified. Files were not downloaded or altered in any way, according to the department. So heads up to you, if you have anything to do with Workforce West Virginia, they may be contacting you. Moving on, let's talk about the Mississippi Center for Advanced Medicine, because they had a ransomware hit on December 20th that is believed to have impacted information that may include or be a, or have a subset of the following information: names, email addresses, phone numbers, home addresses, dates of birth, social security, information to process insurance claims, prescription information such as prescription number, prescribing doctor, medication names and dates, medical history, as well as certain clinical services such as whether an influenza test was ordered. Obviously, that's a huge thing. They are one of the largest healthcare providers in the state of Mississippi. So heads up to you if you have anything to do with the Center for Advanced Medicine in Mississippi. And finally, and we have a couple of different finalies for you this week, as it's just been absolutely bonkers out there. The first one is on ransomware itself, because there's a lot of people in my community in cybersecurity that are looking at basically making ransomware a national emergency. We'd like the federal government to do this. Think about this, and the numbers are in. The United States suffered 65,000 ransomware attacks in 2020. That's over 7 an hour, and it's getting worse. That is according to research done by Recorded Future. Also, the Boston-based Cyber Reason found that 80% of organizations that previously paid ransom demands confirmed they were exposed to a second attack, according to a commissioned survey of 1,263 cybersecurity professionals varying industries from the United States to the UK, Spain, Germany, France, the UAE, and Singapore. This is increasing. This is rising. This is becoming more of a problem. And while we see personal people hit, you know, like you can download download something and get infected and ransomed at home and you'll have to pay $500 or $1,000. They're going after companies, and they're going after companies with a vengeance, because they can get millions of dollars after basically due to a successful ransomware attack. So this is a huge, huge problem that we are seeing. It's only getting worse out there. So I think it's time for the U.S. government to declare this a national emergency, and we all really step up our game. And another finally we've got is McDonald's. That's right. Again, we're talking about McDonald's. I talked about them last week, and it's kind of a data breach. And hear me out here. McDonald's has been accused of illegally collecting and processing customers' voice recordings without their consent in the United States, but specifically the state of Illinois. Like so many corporations, McDonald's has turned to AI to use computers in places of people. And in 2019, it basically announced that it had bought a voice recognition company in Silicon Valley, previously known as Apprente, and converted it into what is now known as McD Tech Labs. And they did this so they could build a voice-controlled chatbot for its drive-through windows. Now, earlier this month in June, McDonald's said that 10 of its restaurants in Chicago, Illinois, are testing this chatbot. I've actually been through one of those, given that I'm based in the Chicagoland area. And they're looking to have this permanently replace human workers. As you'd expect, you basically tell your order to the system from your car. It takes care of that order for you. The software apparently has an 85% accuracy rate, according to McDonald's as well. Although the automated service may be convenient, for McDonald's, Shannon Carpenter, who is a resident of Illinois, claims that McDonald's is breaking the law. The law has some of the, basically this state, Illinois, has some of the most restrictive data privacy laws. And specifically, we have the Biometric Information Privacy Act, or BIPA, which states, and I quote, "No private entity may collect, capture, purchase, receive through trade, or otherwise obtain a person's or customer's biometric identifier or biometric information unless you receive written consent." And so as you're going through that drive-through, you're not getting written consent from McDonald's, and you're talking to the AI, which is capturing your voice, which is a biometric. Now, Mr. Carpenter sued McDonald's in April on behalf of himself and all other affected residents of Illinois. He claims that basically McDonald's has broken the BIPA by not obtaining written consent from its customers to collect and process their voice data, nor has it explained in its privacy policy how or if the data is stored or deleted. His lawsuit also states that McDonald's has been experimenting with AI software, taking orders at its drive-thru since at least last year, which is true. I remember that in 2020, there is actually a McDonald's, in the Chicagoland area that I knew of that actually had this. And so sure enough, we tested it out. And for the record, McDonald's' global headquarters is in the Chicagoland area as well. So this obviously hits close to home. And finally, we have to talk about cybersecurity firm Cognyte. And this one, oh, this is a tough one. Now, in recent news, basically Cognyte, which is a cybersecurity analytics firm, was found to be responsible for leaving a huge database unsecured, which led to more than 5 billion records being exposed online. Now, this database could be accessed by anyone and did not require any sort of authorization or authentication. It appears to be rather ironic that this database was made for the purpose of cross-checking whether the personal information of any of their clients was present in known breaches. And here we are. The database itself turned out to be a data breach and exposed their own data from past breaches. Now, this discovery was made by researchers at Comparatech, who found out that the information leaked included names, passwords, email addresses, and the original source of the leak. This database was stored on an Elasticsearch cluster, and in total, there were 5,085,132,102 records. This data may or may not have been accessed by a number of third-party individuals. There's really no way of telling, because apparently their logging for access really wasn't that turned up. So, according to this report that was released, some of the data belongs to high-profile data breaches, such as Zoosk, Tumblr, Antipublic, MySpace, Canva, Verification.io, iMesh, Edmodo, VK, Exploit, Master Breach Comp, Rambler, OneBip, Scentbird, Apen.com, Toondo, Wishbone, Wattpad, Mathway, Promo.com, MGM, and Estante, which apparently is a Brazilian bookshop. So heads up to you, if you've used any of those websites, you just got caught up in this almost 5.1 billion record data breach that was there to actually give you an alert that you were in a data breach, and now they've just data breached you again. So obviously that's a huge problem. And the reason why I ended with that one is because it is always tough when a cybersecurity firm has a data breach. Obviously, nobody wants to go with this. I have a good amount of sympathy for them. But at the same token, it also is very reputation damaging, or can be, to the cybersecurity community, because we are the ones that are there tasked with helping people and companies maintain security. And when we fail in our security, it's always a problem. I'm not throwing them under the bus, but it's a huge, huge problem that we have. And this is why we need to be the most tinfoil hat people on the planet. So those were your breaches of the week. Wow, there was a ton. And like I said, I excluded a ton. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive, I think, is just a rather important one, because we're talking about our national drinking water supply. And that water supply is seriously at risk. Now, here's what's going on. And this is actually, I'm cribbing very heavily from Brian Krebs of Krebs on Security, who just did an excellent article on this, but also from NBC News, reports from places like the Water Sector Coordinating Council and other things. But this is just some excellent reporting all the way around, because we've seen a couple of things in the last 6 months or so, actually a little longer than that, that have been very concerning in this manner. So with that, let's get going here, because amid multiple recent reports of attackers breaking into and basically messing with the drinking water treatment systems comes a new industry survey with some rather shocking findings. A majority of the 52,000 separate drinking water systems in the United States still haven't inventoried some or any of their IT systems, which is a basic first step in protecting networks from a cyber attack. Essentially, any good cybersecurity framework you have has asset management. You have to know what computers you have, what technology you have, and all of that, and then make sure that it's up to date, it's maintained properly. And so if anybody adds something, steals something, takes something, or is able to break into something, you know that these machines are the best that you've possibly got. Without that, everything else tends to fall apart. Asset management is beyond critical. Now, the Water Sector Coordinating Council, who I just mentioned, surveyed roughly 600 employees of water and wastewater treatment facilities worldwide and found that 37.9% of utilities have identified all IT assets, with an additional 21.7% working towards that goal, meaning those that are actually have good asset management, or at least the basics of asset management, are in the minority. Most have not. Now, the council found that when it comes to IT systems that are tied to what are known as operational technology, or OT systems, those are basically systems that do things like monitor and control the industrial control systems, meaning the operations of these plants and all of that. When they're tying the IT system to the OT system, just 30.5% had actually identified even their operational technology network assets, with another 22.5% working on that as well. Meaning, when you're looking at the actual controls that, let's say, open the floodgates, close the floodgates, that's the ICS, the industrial control systems, less than a third have actually identified all of this in their networks. That's crazy. And according to this report, and I quote, "Identifying IT and OT assets is a critical first step in improving cybersecurity. An organization cannot protect what it cannot see." Exactly. Asset management is beyond important. Now, it's also hard to see threats, though, when you're not really looking for them. 67.9% of water systems reported no IT security incidents in the last 12 months, which is highly, highly unlikely given that there's over 52,000 of them, meaning if they don't have logging, if they don't have threat detection or visibility or anything else into that network, they simply can't see what is happening on, if what's going on in their network. And if you can't see it, you can't understand there's a threat. If you can't see it, you can't remediate it or fix it. Now, Michael Arsenault, who is the managing director of the Water ISAC, and if you didn't know, ISACs are basically organizations that facilitate information sharing and the adoption of best practices among a vertical. So there's like a health ISAC, a state ISAC for state governments. There's a water ISAC for critical infrastructure that is water. Basically, they said that the survey shows obviously room for improvement and a need for support and resources. And to quote Mr. Arsenault, threats are increasing and the sector, EPA, CISA, and USDA need to collaborate to help utilities prevent and recover from compromises. Now, while documenting each device that needs protection is obviously a very critical first step, a number of recent cyber attacks on water treatment systems have actually been blamed on a failure to properly secure their employee accounts that could be used for remote access. In April, this past April, prosecutors unveiled an indictment against a 22-year-old from Kansas who was accused of breaking into public water systems in 2019. The defendant in that case is a former employee of the water district that he allegedly hacked. This past February, we learned that somebody got into the water treatment plant in Oldsmar, Florida. I did an entire, I did a daily video, daily podcast on that. That's basically a town of about 15,000 people that were there. And that whoever did that basically tried to add lye into the water system at 100 times its normal level. Effectively, that person could have potentially poisoned the entire town of Oldsmar, Florida. And very, very fortunately, an employee quickly caught that and was able to reverse it, and they were able to shut down the affected system. But that incident actually stemmed from stolen or leaked employee credentials, and they were using TeamViewer, which is a remote access utility that is very popular out there. This attacker accessed an attacker accessed the system of a California water treatment plant in January and deleted several programs used to treat the drinking water. NBC reported a couple weeks ago that an unidentified attacker carried out this attack on an unspecified water treatment plant on January 15th in the San Francisco Bay Area using a username and password of a former employee at the facility. The attacker managed to access the former staff member's TeamViewer account once again, which allowed obviously that employee to remotely access their computers. And that's according to a report compiled by the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center. And that basically report was obtained by NBC News. Now, the report claimed that after the attacker logged into the plant system, they deleted several programs that the facility uses to treat the water drinking in that area. Now, this attack also went unnoticed until the next day, but when it was discovered, the plant was able to reinstall all of the deleted programs and then reset the passwords for that employee. But here's the thing, though, and this is also the, I think, one of the most scary parts of this, is that the vast majority of our nation's water utilities, tens of thousands of them, serve fewer than 3,300 residents, and those utilities currently do not have to report to the EPA about their cybersecurity practices or lack thereof. That's right. The vast majority of our water treatment plants don't have a reporting requirement for IT and cybersecurity standards. The Water Infrastructure Act of 2018 gives utilities operating between 3,300 and 50,000 residents until the end of this month, June of 2021, to complete a cybersecurity risk and resiliency assessment. But we have a whole bunch of these that are not serving that many people. According to the Water Sector Report, a great many of the nation's water utilities are subject to economic disadvantages typical of rural and sometimes deeply urban communities. So they don't have cybersecurity or even IT workforces to help them maintain these systems because, quite frankly, they can't afford to hire just even one IT person. You know, as the recent hacking incidents above can attest to, enabling some form of multi-factor authentication or identity management for remote access can actually stop a lot of these. In other words, if their team viewer had that two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication, and if you listen to me, you know what I'm talking about. You log in with your username and password, and then it prompts you for an additional code that you have to get off of your phone, typically through an app. That basically would have stopped the attacker, because even if there were stolen usernames and passwords, and there were, the attacker wouldn't have access to that ever-changing code that you would have on an authenticator app in your mobile device. However, though, the sharing of remote access credentials among water sector employees is also a contributing factor in these recent incidents, since organizations that let multiple employees use the same account are also less likely to have any form of multi-factor authentication enabled. So if you have 5 employees or 3 employees or 2 employees all working from home and they're all accessing the same system one at a time, they're going to use the same username and password, which then makes it a lot more difficult to set up multi-factor authentication. This, though, is a huge, huge problem that we have overall here in the United States. We basically rely on our drinking water, whether it's, you know, to water cattle for agriculture, water the crops for agriculture, take a shower, you know, cook that, you know, pot of pasta. You know, we saw problems with our water system, conversely, and the quality of it in Flint, Michigan, which is a huge and I believe still ongoing problem. But this is the flip side to it as well. We have to make sure that our water is as clean and as pure as possible, because it's the healthiest thing that we can do, you know, for our citizens, for our crops, for everything, as everything we eat or we buy at our local supermarket is being watered. But at the same token, we have to make sure that our water systems are protected, because it may not be, let's say, impurities leaching up from the ground. Somebody might actually be able to introduce lye or another type of poison into the water supply and start killing people. Not to mention we have issues with potential cyber attacks and cyber warfare. I recently published an article on the ongoing asymmetric cyber war between the United States and Russia and all of that. And imagine, a country like Russia that is very adept at breaking into institutions and critical sectors. Imagine if they were able to essentially shut down the water supply or poison it or worse. So this is a huge, huge problem.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It's a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.